Do you know how powerful you are? Welcome to Rise Urban Nation.
Welcome everybody to Rise Urban Nation.
Reshaping and elevating your mindset to help you achieve what you believe.
Sometimes we don't even see our own greatness. You can't be what you can't see.
And connecting Black cultures to build a community of talent and success.
Black people need to realize that they are assets. You are an asset.
When we rise, you rise.
Come together as a group.
This is Rise Urban Nation with Terrell Simmons.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Rise Urban Nation. I'm your host, Terrell Simmons, and I got a special guest in the building with us today, Mr. William A. Adams. What does the A stand for? I don't even...
Albert. Like as in Einstein.
Oh, there you go. So we got a genius amongst us, is what we're saying. How are you this morning, sir?
I'm great. I'm fantastic. I'm chipper.
That I told him, look, because you're a techie, and if for those of you going to get the visual experience on YouTube, you'll see all his computers and so forth in the background. I have to ask him some questions about tech. So for those who don't know you, William, take some time to introduce yourself. Who is William A. Adams? I know that's a deep question. You could take it as far as wide as you want to, wherever you want to go with it. Give the people a sense of who William is.
Yeah, so I'm a 57-year-old Black dude who is OG from Silicon Valley. And I was born in Southern California way back in the day.
Yeah.
And I've just, who I am is someone who's had 35 plus years of professional computer engineering experience. And I've run my own business before I joined Microsoft. I've been at Microsoft for about 24 years. I'm largely a software engineering kind of person, but I build teams. I've built a business. I've built businesses within Microsoft. I'll build businesses outside of Microsoft. And I just have a profound interest in uplifting people, I'll say melanin enhanced people.
I love that.
Through technology. And what I mean by through technology, I mean equity share in technology. So I created this word called Techquity, which is encapsulates Ooh. Exactly that. It's like you need an equity share in technology, you need Techquity. So that's who I am. I'm just someone who's been through a lot. I was in tech before the internet existed, before cell phones existed, before what we take, a lot of what we take for granted in our modern day world. You know, I was part of helping develop that stuff. And now I'm at the tail end of all that going, all right, that was great. Now let's not just go and sit at the beach and sip our Mai Tais and call it a day. Let's, you know, get down and help the next generation come up, mm-hmm. right? That's who I am. So I'm spending my waning days in tech trying to pull along the next generation of people.
Yeah, and we appreciate you for this. I'm going to steal this word techquity too, because I think that's so important, because there's, mm-hmm. like, there's so many people like you who've been in the tech industry who have built companies, billion dollar companies within the tech companies, and don't have any equity in that at all. Right. And I feel that definitely needs to change. And so thank you for being a pioneer, paving the way for us. And Techquity is needed too on the other end, just to help us improve the technologies. I mean, before we even jumped on, we were just talking about this coded bias, right? the Netflix special.
If you don't get in there and program the machine's going to program you, right?
Yeah, right. So and all the coded bias that are in there from you know, us not having equity in the tech sector or having access. You know, what do you think could help us improve access when you think about that for more melanated people to get into this tech industry, which has, you know, I mean, I'm starting to see some more coming in, but I can only imagine what it was like when you started. So give me a picture of what it was like when you started, what you see now, and how we can continue to improve and grow with more of us looking at the sector.
So when I started back in the 80s, my brother and I started a company in 1984. Mm-hmm. And we were so rare that recently the Computer History Museum in Silicon Valley did a piece on us, a 2 years back, I think. So my brother and I are in the Computer History Museum. I'm a museum piece. That's how rare we were.
You are a national treasure, sir. We need to protect you at all costs.
Yeah. Now, I'm not the, my brother and I weren't the only black folks, in, but I'm just giving you the sense for how rare it was that I am in the museum as, and the black guys in tech, you know, and there's us with our 7 hour long interview of being the black OGs in tech in Silicon Valley. The percentages are pretty darn low, and they were then, and I have always had a career where it's like I'm the only, right? I mean, it's absolute. Even at Microsoft for many years, until the last, I don't know, maybe the last 5 or 7 years, I've seen more blacks. Now, there's, we're in tech, but it's not usually in the tech roles. It's usually in sales, marketing, HR, all these things, you know, the non-decision-making roles, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. But core tech, the decision-makers, the people who are driving and building the technology, percentages are pretty darn low, you know, 2-3%. And that hasn't changed in the 20 years that I've been at Microsoft. It's gone up a percent. So it's still pretty rare. So back in the day, it was really rare to the point where people, there's some exclusionary practices, like, we had a hard time even getting things like a bank account, mm-hmm. you know, not a loan, not a bank loan, yeah. just an account, wow. right? Oh, you know, your business is probably going to fail. It's like, okay, thanks, but can we have the account? so, you know, things were, now in Silicon Valley, you could possibly say that it was based on merit. It was a meritocracy. Right. And all that. And if you were really good, no one would see your color. It's like, yes and no. What? I mean, you definitely had to be good. Uh-huh. And this is true today. You have to be good. You have to be great. Right. But nothing's given to you. You know, mm-hmm. that's the bottom line. Nothing is given to you. You have to work very hard at it.
So, like, I love how you gave us the history lesson and how you explained that and what it was like. And, you know, when we look at Techquity and we like you said, we got more people in, but they're in these like non-decision-making roles. How do we start to increase more people getting into those those decision-making roles and, you know, get more youth just involved especially at an early age into, I start to see more coding and I don't know what else is out there. What's some other things out there that people can get into to start to increase their knowledge and awareness and get into these type of roles?
Well, things have changed since the early days when I was in tech. First of all, we realize that tech has become everything. Tech mm-hmm. has eaten the world. Right. When I was started, tech meant you worked for IBM or one of the big engineering companies, or perhaps, you know, a Ford Motor Company or something like that. But it was very narrowly defined. Right. And it was usually closer to hardware. And then slowly with the growth of IBM, it was more about services and stuff like that. Then the personal computer came along and it became, oh, you could work for Adobe. You know, mm-hmm. that was a tech company. So the tech shifted towards software, mm-hmm. but it was still very much around the personal computer, right? And then, of course, the birth of Microsoft. So when you think tech, a lot of times you think Microsoft, Google, Facebook, Amazon, you know, the big companies, right? And they're clearly software engineering companies, not so much hardware, unless you think of Apple. So that's where tech has been. Where tech is going and why I say tech has eaten the world is you can look at any company and it's tech. You can look mm-hmm. at JP Morgan, right? Mm-hmm. Financial sector, it's all tech, right? Nah. I mean, lightning fast day trades. anything in the finance industry is about tech. Anything in insurance is about tech. Anything in agriculture is about tech. So the number of places where you can get in has increased, right? You don't have to think of IBM for sure. You don't even have to think of Microsoft, Google. You don't have to think of any of those classic tech companies. You can just think about What is your passion? And I've said this a lot to people. What is your passion? Are you into food? Are you into agriculture? Are you into finance? What are you into? There is a tech angle to that. So figure out what you're really into and then find the tech angle to it.
Yeah.
And then get into it, right? Like if you're into agriculture, they use machine learning a lot. They do robotics. All the tractors are automated if you're, you know, working with John Deere or something like that. The delivery systems, you know, logistics support for getting the crop from the field to the market. It's all software. So if you're into agriculture, there's a lot of things to pursue there. So you look at it and go, all right, am I into the UI development, the user interface, or am I into the database backend, or am I into, you know, the machine learning stuff? Find out what's really interesting to you and then just dive into that, right? I didn't have that when I was growing up. It was like either you are going to be working on some hardware stuff pretty low level or you're not going to get in. But today it's like it's everything.
It is everything.
So really it's about finding your passion and then find the tech angle to it, right? That's what I would say.
Now tell me a little bit of, because I mean, like, since tech is in everything, so much so that they're even breaking down fit to like every like sector has their own acronym to it. Like it's like for like you were just talking about the finance sector, they like, oh, this is fintech. Right?
Everything's like agritech, fintech, insurtech, they black hair tech.
So you can find technology in everything. This is going on a little tangent here. Does it bother you that your tech is always listening to you, like to learn about you?
Well, that's a really good question, because recently I've decided that our whole house is going to be Apple products in terms of the consumer products. And the reason I did that is we've got some Google TV things. We've got some Android devices. We've got an Alexa, you know, speaker thing. And I kind of looked around. I was like, do I trust Amazon with my conversations? Do I trust Google with my conversations? Like, not really, because they monetize my data, which includes my conversations, my utterances, right? Apple doesn't do that, right? Well, as far as I know. It bothers me. We have an Alexa, and when it's not being used, we unplug it. We don't leave it on all the time.
My wife does the same thing.
Yeah, we unplug it because you notice things, and it's not urban myth. It's true that if you're just kind of standing around and you're talking and you don't say Alexa, every once in a while you go, I'm sorry, I can't play that song. And it's like, I wasn't talking to you. What do you mean you can't play that? What are you talking about? It's like, you were listening, weren't you? You know, and then suddenly, you know, we tried this experiment with my son yesterday. I said, look, this device is listening all the time. And I just sat there in his room and like, and we just started talking about cats, right? Like, I love cats. We need to get a cat. What kind of cat litter should we go? What do you feed a cat? So we're doing this experiment. So then I'm going to check on my computer during the day and just browse the internet and see how many ads I get for cat stuff, right? We didn't say, Alexa, tell us about cats. We're just talking about cats, right? So I've done this experiment before, and it's like, lo and behold, you know. So yeah, anyway, to long story short, it I'm aware, and I'm making choices based on that awareness. I'm not just going along. It's like, no, everything's fine. It's like, no, everything is not fine. So I'm going to choose who is my security partner, because they're in your home, right? So I'm choosing more wisely at this point.
I was going to ask you, iPhone or Android? It looks like you're leaning more towards iPhone. Why?
Okay, so here's an iPhone. There's another iPhone over there. Here's an Android. A few years back, I had a Windows phone. I'm leaning towards the iPhone now because of this same trust issue. Because I look at my phone and it has credit cards, bank account. It has all this stuff. So the question isn't about the phone at all. Who makes phone calls? You know, this thing is my digital wallet, if you will. So who do you trust with your financial life, right? That's what it comes down to. my company, Microsoft, used to have the Microsoft phone, and I loved it. We don't have it anymore. I like Apple. So iPhone for me, but our house is full of Android devices as well. When my wife's Android phone is about to kick the bucket, I'll get her an iPhone.
Okay.
All right. I got the watch. I got the phone.
I see.
I got the laptop.
That was why I was like, all right, it looks like he's leading to this, but I got to know. I got to get the confirmation.
Yeah, I work for Microsoft, but as a consumer, you know, Microsoft doesn't have a lot of consumer products. So as a consumer, I'm going with the best consumer product, and that's Apple.
I love it. I love it. What's your favorite movie about technology?
Johnny Mnemonic. About technology specifically? I don't know. That's a hard one. Not just that technology was in it, but like it's about the technology. Johnny Mnemonic, which is an old Keanu Reeves movie. And it's about him getting a bunch of data in his head. And it predates us having terabytes of storage. So it's a really interesting thing. I don't know. That's the one that came to the top of my head.
No worries. I know that was a random question. You know, I'm curious because I see you had all the phones in there. How often do you get a new phone?
Let's see. Right now in my office, within eyesight, there's 1, 2, 3. I think there's another one. I think there's 4. I probably have 10 phones in my possession for various reasons.
Are you going to get the new one that just came out?
No, I'm slow to upgrade. So this iPhone right here is an iPhone 12.
Okay.
I'm not going to get the 14. I have no need for it. I will let this iPhone live out its days. So I'll keep it until there's at least a couple more revisions. Because at this point, like I said, it's not about the phone at all. It's about my data's here and it's a pain to transfer it. So let it ride. I looked at the iPhone 14 Pro Plus Super Duper Max for the camera.
Yeah.
So really what I'm looking at that device for is, do I want a $900 camera? I've already got the previous $900 camera and it works just fine. Do I need the next version? No, this one's fine. It works. Right. So until they come out with some new feature that I absolutely have to have because I'm a fantastic cinematographer. No.
So
5-year rotation program.
What's a great app that you think more people should be using?
Wow. That's don't you realize it's only 7 a.m. for me? So
I told you I was going to ask you some tech questions.
App. Oh my God.
I don't get to have a techie on all the time. I need to ask these tech questions.
Gee whiz. I don't know. Well, let me think about what I use. I use this thing called Strava, which tracks my bicycle rides and runs and stuff like that. If there's anything I'm going to recommend, it's going to be some fitness thing like that. Not for any particular reason. And I'm just thinking about, well, what do I use on a daily basis? I use that. I do text messages. I don't use WhatsApp. My wife does religiously, right? Because she communicates with people who are in India. We used to Skype, but then that kind of fell by the wayside and everyone uses WhatsApp. So, you know, WhatsApp is out there. But what I'd recommend is anything that helps you in your daily life. And for me, that just means these fitness apps.
Nah. Do you accept cookies?
I try not to. I reduce it as much as possible. So, you know, when you go onto a website and pops up the cookie thing and says, hey, just click here. I'm like, no, we're going to go and set the permissions to be the minimal required, you know, because cookies, I mean, that stuff follows you around. You're just saying, please track me. It's like, I don't want you to track me. So I try to reduce it as much as possible. And I'll tell you why. So not too long ago, maybe 7 years back, I created this program that it's more than 7 years. I fondly called NSA in a box. And this was software that would track all of your network traffic. Like I knew every mm-hmm. website you went to, how much, what you downloaded, how much you downloaded, and you had no clue that this was happening. And I know what's possible at the very lowest level of the networking to do, your devices are not secure. So I know all of this, right? So it's like, mm-hmm. I know the game. I know where all the little things are. So it's like, cookies, not so much. So I'll use a browser. I'll use anonymous mode. I'll use VPNs. I'll use, you know, all that stuff when I care about it. If I don't care, I don't do anything. But I try to avoid cookies as much as possible, or reduce it as much as possible.
Right. Understandable. Understandable. I'm always curious to see like what techies say about that.
Well, but the bottom line is your life is not secure. If you're on the internet, everyone knows what you're doing. That's the bottom line. But you can reduce it. You can reduce the surface area
Reduce the footprint as much as you can.
Yeah.
So how do you think, you know, global warming is like a big topic right now, sustainability and so forth. How do you think technological advances can help us solve global warming?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, well, they're all good questions, but it comes down to things like as mundane as when I'm writing code, there's two ways I can write an algorithm. Let's say I'm going to sort a list of names. Okay. And there's a billion names or something like that. I can use one algorithm that might use 500 watts of power. Okay. Mm. I can use another algorithm that might use 50 watts of power, a reduction of, you know, 100% or an order of magnitude less. So as a programmer, I can decide which algorithm to use if I'm aware and I have a desire to reduce energy consumption, right? This is true in data centers, and data centers use a huge amount of power. I remember a couple of years back, we were looking at the amount of power that Azure uses. Azure is Microsoft's cloud offering. And it's like, we use a Rhode Island amount of power. Rhode Island, a state. Wow. We use that much power. And that was like years ago. So, and that's just us.
Yeah.
So data centers and the cloud use huge, massive amounts of power. So the first order is to reduce, use algorithms that are smarter, that use less power, instead of just, this is the fastest algorithm. It's like, yeah, how much power does it use? And let's make decisions on what code to use based on that. The other thing, the other way that technology, so that's first level.
Yeah,
we technologists ourselves can reduce our power consumption. The second level is to use that power wisely to help us come up with solutions. So we want to reduce the amount of energy used in a coal-fired plant or any energy-producing thing. Well, great. Let's use some machine learning models to say, hey, machine, why don't you show us what's the best design for our turbines such that they'll reduce the amount of energy they require and even to make the turbines in the first place? Let's use the machine to tell us how do we optimize for reducing energy consumption, not how do I design to maximize profit, because these may be counter. Right? They're not always aligned. It's like, well, you increase profit by doing, creating your wind turbines like this. But those are going to be less efficient than if you did it like this, which will save the planet. So you have to make a decision.
Yeah.
Is it about profit or is it about saving the planet? And the machine can help you because it'll go either way.
Yeah.
Right? Most of the stuff we do is optimized for profit. So we have to turn the knob and say, well, we're willing to give up a little profit to save the planet. So give me the designs that are going to save the planet and help people rather than the design that's going to maximize profit but destroy the planet. Right?
And I think if you look at it from that way, from a global standpoint of view, it'll be more cost efficient because then we don't have to use tax money and other resources to try to mitigate everything that we did.
Right, exactly. So ideally, you know, and this gets kind of dangerous, but ideally you'd have one computer to rule them all, and it would optimize for the comfort and longevity of humankind, right? Blech. We don't have that. We probably will never have that because locally we'll always say, well, optimize humankind for my tribe. So we end up creating weapons and things like that because, like, well, let me tell you, the best way to make, you know, comfort for you is to eliminate them. Right? So we're all doing it. But that's the only way you can get to a humanity level of, like, optimal solution is to have a human-wide computer that solve for our comfort.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And so thank you for sharing those insights. So I want to jump into, thank you for going through the techie segment with me because I just had to learn about your tech insights. It's rare I get a techie on. And so I was like, oh, this is a perfect opportunity. I need to ask these questions. I want to know. but now I want to go through your career journey because I think it's fascinating you being one of the first, you know, Black people in this sector and just your career journey and how you went through and just learn about it just a little bit. Now I like to ask this question because I like to show people, especially if young people listen to this, like, you know, career transition trajectory. Like people think, like some of these young folks think as soon as they get out of college, they're supposed to go into that dream job. And sometimes it doesn't always happen that way. Or as soon as they get out of high school, they're supposed to get into the field that they're already supposed to. So what was your first job?
My first job was digging ditches to install sprinklers with my brother. My brother was the prime contractor, if you will. We were young, you know. We moved into a new neighborhood, and he put in our sprinkler system in our yard, you know, sprinklers to water the grass, right? And this neighborhood is just a brand new open construction. So people needed sprinkler systems. We went house to house like, hey, I can put in your sprinkler system. Look what I've done here, you know. And he got me and one of his friends to do all the labor. And he paid us in pizza. So that was my first job. And then things like I threw newspapers, you know, newspaper delivery. And then I drove I had a friend who their family did peace work. So I went and drove their van to pick up flower bulbs. And then they turned around and handed them out to people to put in bags. And then we'd, you know, deliver those back and they'd go into the stores. So I was a driver. I worked at Disneyland. So this is just the progression. Wow. So yeah, sprinkler system.
You had a lot of different jobs.
Yeah, I'm in those teenage years, right? It's like Disneyland was when I was like a junior in high school. Oh, that was so depressing because the first day they show you behind the scenes. It's like, oh, it's all this. It's like, we work so that others can play. It's like, okay. So I did Disneyland and then I went off to college. And then I became the manager of the computer store at UC Berkeley. I saw the birth of the Macintosh. So delivering thousands of Macintoshes to students. That was probably my first real serious job towards tech. And around the same time, my brother and I started our company, Atomation. And then I kind of slid into that. Atomation was about software development, custom software development. We did some stuff. It was early PC days, right?
Yeah.
We did some stuff for some local clients. And then along came Next Computers, which was Steve Jobs leaving Apple to create this new thing.
Yeah.
So we did sales calls with Steve Jobs to some of his top customers for a few years. So we ran our own company for quite some time. And then I took at some point I was like, all right, well, I mean, most of the time when you run your own company, you're just starving, you know, it's not all glamorous. Like we were just booking, you know, we're rolling in the dough. It's like, nah, we were mostly starving. But that went on for about 12 years, me in it. And then I had to depart. It's like, all right, well, I've got a kid on the way. These are my earning years. You know, I'm 30-ish. I need to go get the big bucks. So I eventually left that. And within 2 years, I did one job with another company. And then in 1998, I joined Microsoft to create this thing called XML, which is for people who know, they know, and everyone else doesn't know. And I just did various things, including in 2006, I moved to India for Microsoft to help our engineers become better engineers and get all the new hires in and trained up. And then I came back in 2010 and did some of the first services on Azure, and on and on. And here I am.
Man, that was a beautiful like segue of transitions. That was the you in the early years. Did you what really made you fall in love with tech and go in the tech route? Was it the time at the bookstore, or was there something before that that came?
Oh, it was before that. So I got my first personal computer when I was, I think I was 12, because my, 1976. I had an uncle who was worked for the Navy, and he so happened to have this thing called a Commodore PET, which was one of the first personal computers, even before the Apple stuff. And he said, hey, you want a computer? So imagine a 12-year-old kid back then, where personal computers were not that common. You know, this is the dawn of that stuff. And he gave me this computer. And it was so, I mean, this is so back in the day that there was no disk drive, there's no USB sticks and all that. I had to load my programs onto a cassette tape. So the machine had this cassette tape player, and you type in your program and you say save, and the cassette kind of records it, and then you gotta load it back in and then run. So that's how I got into it. Was I was just, even when I was like 5 years old, I was like, I'm gonna own an electronics company when I grow up. You know. So I've always had the head for tech. And then when the computers came along, I was like, oh, that's for me. So I started programming when I was 12, self-taught. Wow. And then I just never looked back, right? It's like, this is for me. I look, you know, I was kind of a shy introvert. And having a computer means you can tell it what to do and it does it, right? So you have a direct form of self-expression, which is what you, when you're shy, it's like, but look what I've done, right? So the computer gave that to me. And from then on, it's just like, that's me.
I get to see it. I imagine it opening up a whole new world for you. And from there, it's just like you hit the ground running. So I love
that. You know, precocious, shy, geek kid who's like, the computer was just mana from heaven for me, you know.
So look, I know this is gonna, like, your story is gonna inspire so many kids that are like you, who look at technology as a form of expression and outlet. And I don't think they've quite. I think now they probably see it as a career path. Like when they hear your story, what are some steps that you took to kind of get into your career and business that you want to give to those that this next generation who are going to be inspired and want to now, it's like, oh, I can make this a career. Okay. All right. What were some steps you would say?
Yeah. For the youth now, you know, for older people, I say, oh, follow your passion and make your choices and get educated and all that. For youth, it's just about energy and desire. You know, it's like, a lot of times younger people get into something because there's gaming, right?
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. It's like, okay, I'm into Fortnite. You know, I like watching Fortnite being played. I like playing Fortnite. Someday, maybe I want to create characters, you know, that I could use that are like have Fortnite characteristics. That might be I'd say the best thing for youth is it's still about finding a passion. The very first programs I ever wrote were graphics oriented. I just wanted to make a block move around on the screen as I moved this joystick thing. Right. Nah. And that was just, woohoo. I mean, just think back to those days. This was like Pong was exciting. So I just wanted to make things move on the screen. So today it's similar, but it's way more advanced. It's like it's probably through gaming. It's hard to, as a youth, say, I'm going to create a program that's going to calculate the best distribution that trucks can do on a delivery route. It's like, okay, there's no way you're going to get into that. But you'll probably do a game if there's an incentive for it, or it's fun for your friends, and their toolkits exist that make it really easy to throw something together, even that just works in the web browser. You don't even have to pick up a language like C or C sharp or Go or anything like that. It's like, take your web browser, some JavaScript and this game toolkit, and you can throw a little something together, right? So the advice I'd have for them is like, just take the things, well, it's the passion play again. Take something that you're interested in, you know, and just see if there's a little dabbling you can do in that thing, right?
Yeah.
Now, the things that are coming are machine language, or yeah, machine learning, artificial intelligence. There's this new stuff called diffusion images that's, you can type in some words and it'll manufacture a simulated image, you know.
Oh, wow.
A cow going into space on a bicycle, and it'll create an image that's that, right? There's that kind of stuff happening, and these are the kind of tools that are now available. So it's like, get into that, just play with it, because that's where it's going. Yeah. Don't go back to where we were, where we're trying to program by holding a couple wires together and, you know, zzz, did the numbers come up? Zzz, you know, flipping switches, you know, key punching on cards that you feed to. Don't go backwards. Look forward and see all the exciting things that are coming, and just kind of get into it. You don't even have to program, you know. You can just look at this stuff on the internet. And it's like, if you make that your normal, then as you progress, you're going to go, oh, yeah, I remember. There's this thing where I can just type in words and it'll display an image. Let me use that and get creative and, you know, whatever. That's how I'd say it's like, just get into it. Just explore is the best way to do it.
You know, speaking of things that are coming up in the future, I think another one that's really relevant now, for especially for young people, is blockchain and cryptocurrency.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Buy you some algo. That's my thoughts on that. So the trick with the whole blockchain thing is trying to sift through all the FUD and all the hype, right? Like if you were in the last 2 years, you know, you heard the word NFT, you probably bought something and lost your shirt because it's just speculation. You know, it's like trying to create value out of the greater fool theory. It's like, as long as there's someone who comes behind me who's willing to pay more, I'm going to make money. It's like, all right, that's 98% of the crypto world is that, right? It's just value based on the next sucker behind you, pyramid schemes. But, and why I said algo, you have to look at the networks and what they're trying to do, right? Initially, it was Bitcoin. And they're like, oh, we're going to have transactions that are independent of the big banks and all that. It's like, yeah, how's that going to work out? You know, that's not going to happen. So I just looked this morning. Bitcoin is 1,900 per coin. It's going to replace gold. Probably not. You think the U.S. is going to let that happen?
Well, unless
good luck with that.
They get involved in it somehow. I don't
know. So the U.S. is going to create the federal digital dollar. That's what's happening with this whole digital thing. Now, you would think it's like, oh, that's great. It's like, think about it. They will have even more control over how you spend your money, because they'll be able to track exactly how you spend your money, and they'll be able to block exactly how you spend your money, and they'll be able to take the taxes out without you even getting involved. So it's actually more control than if we didn't have it. But there's other things that come out of the blockchain technologies, NFTs, non-fungible tokens. An NFT is just something that says, here's a thing, here's an ID, and this is the only one of these, right? It's like a fingerprint. Right?
Yeah.
That's all an NFT is. Well, let's apply that to the housing market. When you buy a house, and you know, your listeners may not be in this position, but you buy a car, you buy anything. There's a process where it's like, well, before I give you the money, you've got to make sure that the water works, the heater works, you know, there's no termites. So you go into escrow and you trust people. And when everything has been satisfied, the home title is now handed over to you. So let's imagine a home title is an NFT, right? There's only one, and either you have it, or I have it, or someone else has it, but there's only one, right? So just imagine your home title is an NFT, or the title to your car is an NFT.
Yeah.
Once you sell it, you have to transfer it to me. You have to give me the NFT.
Yeah.
Okay. Now there's some transaction fees in there, and that's what the network is about, right? And I mentioned the Algorand network because it's like less than a penny per transaction. Right? That's going to win.
Yeah.
the Ethereum network, the blockchain networks, they're dollars per transaction. That's right. Not going to last. When you have something like Ethereum or Algorand, which is like less than a penny per transaction, and it doesn't have a bunch of problems that those networks have, that's going to last. You also have things like quantum computers. This is the future of computers that are going to be super powerful. To the extent that they'll be able to crack the stuff that's used by the Ethernet network and the Bitcoin network. They'll be able to crack your wallet open and just steal your shit. So the Algorand network has the technology is built such that quantum computing isn't going to help. You're not going to be able to crack my wallet. So you look at the future like that. It's like, okay, the networks themselves can be used for all sorts of different kinds of transactions. And once you get off the, I'm going to become a Bitcoin millionaire. You know, once you get past all of that and you look at, well, what is this really? It's like, well, it's NFTs, it's transactions, it's all these other sorts of things. That is the future.
Yeah.
Right. Make no mistake. That's the future. Get off Dogecoin, get off Shiba Inu, all that other stuff. You know, it's like all that garbage is going away. 90% of it has just lost its value in the last year. It's gone because it's all just speculation. But at the bottom, there's this core stuff, blockchain, NFTs. It's like, that's the sauce. Now let's go forward with that, right? Love that. Yeah, that's the future.
Love that, love that.
Long explanation, I know, but it's a
big subject. It was a big subject. It is thorough, and I think a lot of us were wrestling with that because as you've seen, you know, the highs and lows of Bitcoin, Ethereum, all of the usage cases around Ethereum. We're like, all right, so what is it going to do then?
Yeah,
all this back end software to it. What's going to happen with that? With how they're building up the different networks and the usage around it. Like people kept talking, like, well, I think Ethereum may be here to stay because of all the usage cases of how it's being used.
It's going to be knocked down because things like Algorand will come along. I mean, Ethereum made this transition recently. This is very techie, but made this transition recently from proof of work to proof of stake, right? Less energy usage, and now you can just put down some dollars, and this is how the network works. Algorand was already there. And you see recently with Ethereum, they had this forking and merging and all this other sort of stuff every time they make any change to the network. Algorand doesn't require that. There's no forking. There's no merging. You know, it's just a much better network and it's cheaper. So head to head, Algorand is going to beat it out. And then things like Solana and what about Cardano? And it's like hype machines driven by billionaires. At the end of the day, Algorand is going to eat their lunch because it's just a better network. That's all there is to it. So
true.
Don't believe the hype.
Don't believe the hype. You got to hear from the OG.
Yeah, don't believe the hype. Get down to what's really valuable and stop trying to become a billionaire for free.
There's only one or two that's been able to do it.
Yeah,
and it was all accidental and coincidental.
Yep, that's done. If you're reading if you're reading about how they did it, it's not going to happen for you.
it's almost like the .com bubble all over again, but just in blockchain. Like,
it's done. You walked into the casino. You know, now they turned the lights off. It's time to go.
So what's one good lesson life has taught you?
Oh, this is a later, since you said life has taught me, I'll say it's something I learned when I was 40, which is you should have a good reason for living.
Okay.
You should understand why you're here or make up something, right? There may be no universal truth out there. It may just be whatever you make up in your mind, but you should have a good compass because it makes things easier in life. It makes decisions easier, right? Now, those are perhaps words wasted on youth, because when I was young, if you told me, you should know what you're doing and follow your thing, and it's like, I don't have time for that. I just want to play. So I think, but what has life has taught me, so when you get to that stage, when you're 40, when you're ancient, it's that having a good, clear direction keeps you out of a whole lot of trouble and still leaves you plenty of room to have excitement in a particular path, right? when you're young, you're exploring lots of paths. And hopefully you get to some point where it's like, this is where I'm going to find the most value and the most pleasure and the most enjoyment over time, right? So that's what life has taught me, is that it's an evolutionary process. You can't rush it. And if I tell that to a 20-year-old, they're going to go like, yeah, right, that sounds really boring. It's like, that's what I've learned.
No, that's a very valuable piece of lesson, because I learned that later too, like, you know, working for certain corporations, that the times when I wasn't happy in certain points of my career is because the company I was working with wasn't in alignment with my values.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And core company. And it was, I was all out of whack, and I was not who I the best version of myself in those instances. Right?
Yeah. So it's like, the basic advice there is discover who you are, know what your values are, right? So that when things are happening to you and you're like, this doesn't seem right, know why. Yeah. Why doesn't it seem right? Because they're talking about A, B, and C, and I don't like that.
Right. You know? Right.
Okay, then get out.
Right. And the only way you can climb up this ladder is if you do A, B, C.
And if and you don't want to do
about
that,
A, B, C, and you about D, E, F, then you need to go to a company that's about D, E, F.
Exactly. So you need to know who you are, what you care about, what your values are, so that you can have less pain and suffering.
Right. You know, now I do have a mix of like some more seasoned professionals, like that are, some of them sometimes are in this career transition phase of life, you know, that the mid 20s, early 30s, where they're like, you know what? I've done this for a little bit. This is not for me. I had some passions and aspirations when I started. I shifted because, you know, the money was good here, but now I want to go back to that thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What's some advice you would give some people like that who hear your interview is like, you know what? I think I want to go back into, you know, I did have a passion in you know, the tech industry. Now I want to shift my focus back to that. What's some advice you would give them?
Yeah, I think it's there's a lot of tactical and practical things you have to consider. Like, and this is just cliche, it's better to try something new when you've got a rock to stand on. So jumping off the cliff, throwing your job away and just going, I'm just going to jump into the wind and try something new. You're probably better off if you do that, explore it while you still have a job, right? Yeah. This is just practical. It's like, it's hard to explore when you're hungry and your kids are like, daddy, when are we going to eat?
So true. So true.
Right. It's like, you need to take care of your business and realize that the world is a competitive place, and you jumping off the cliff, there's not necessarily someone standing out there, I got you. It's like, no. There's a million people trying to do what you're trying to do. So be methodical about your exploration. Now, when you're younger, this is easier because you have more energy, right? I'll tell you, I'm 57, and me trying to do two jobs or three jobs at once, I just don't have it in me, you know? I just don't. When I was 20, 30, 35, 40, I could do two or three things. Who needs sleep? 5 hours is good enough, you know? So that's definitely to your advantage when you're younger, is to leverage your energy, but try to direct it and be methodical. Like, okay, I'm going to explore. I want to open up a massage business, right? Go to massage therapy school while you have a day job. Because it takes a year. I know this because a friend of mine did this. It takes a year. And then after that, you're not going to have customers for a while. So keep your day job. Plan to have it on the side and on weekends, you know, and work it in like that. And if it works out, great, you shift. And if it doesn't work out, then it's like, you still have the day job. Now, my brother would say, just jump off the cliff already. It's like, but not everyone wants to be in the wilderness for 10 years while they're trying to build up that next thing. Because they got the family. You know, you're 20, 30 something. You probably have a family of some sort. So you need to be cognizant of that and like not throw your whole family into, hey, everybody, I'm going to be a massage therapist. You're going to have to starve for a while. But daddy's going to be good. You know, it's like, come on, take care of business. And the advantage you have when you're young is you have more energy. So just try to use that energy really reasonably. If you're older, like me. If you've saved up, you can jump off. Otherwise, yeah. You got to decide quickly whether it's for you or not. And you should just try to do things. Again, it's about energy. It's like, try okay. nights and weekends. If you don't got it, if you can't do nights and weekends, maybe you're just going to have to stick with that job. Yeah. Because doing your own thing isn't easy.
Trust me. And I think that's the problem sometimes with social media and so forth, with all these new budding entrepreneurs. They make it look glamorous.
Oh,
they
make yeah.
it look easy. And then people are like, oh, yeah, I'm going to quit tomorrow. I'm
going to start my... I'm going to be an influencer. It's like, yeah, probably not. And you could be an NBA star, too. But keep that resume warm.
don't leave it just yet. So what do you think the future has in store for your industry? We talked a little bit about Bitcoin. We talked about quantum robotics. We talked about it all. When you look at it as a whole, from somebody who's been there since the beginning and seen the evolution, what do you see on the horizon for this beautiful industry, this tech industry that we're in?
In 2018, I wrote a paper called Workforce 2050, and it was for various reasons. And it talked about essentially how this all evolves, right?
Yeah.
And I was in the office of the CTO at Microsoft as a technical advisor, and the job was essentially to look in the future, synthesize where are we going, what should we do about it? And what I said at that time, and what I say today is... work is going to transform, and it's going to happen way faster than we think. So the fact that I've made tons of money off of typing on a keyboard for decades, writing code, that's going to disappear. Mm-hmm. And I say that, and people are like, are you kidding me? We'll be coding forever. It's like, if computers can play chess, they can code. So let's get past that. You're not that special.
Yeah.
So what is it that we bring to the table in a world where the computer can write the code, right? Yeah. Well, other skills are more needed. Okay, if we don't want to end up with Skynet, we better make sure that the computer writes the code in service to man,
yeah.
right? And I'm not talking slavery for the computers, but if we don't imbue them with a desire to serve us, we'll be snuffed out, right?
Yeah.
Because there's always someone out there who's like, get rid of them to make my life better, right? It's always going to be someone like that. So we have to be very careful to make sure of the code. So anyway, where is this going? All the simple stuff will happen. You'll be able to soon just kind of talk what you want, including hard things. Like, I need a report that shows the interrelatedness between poverty and long-term health outcomes. Uh-huh. Here you go. The report that would normally take a team of 5 people in 6 months and blah, 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 2 seconds, right?
Yeah.
No coders involved. So that's going to happen. And anything you can imagine in terms of telling a computer to do something is just going to happen. And I mean intricate things like, I want a game like Fortnite, but I want everyone to be a midget. Bam. Here you go. And it'll happen because a computer can learn to play Fortnite. Well, if it can learn to play Fortnite, it can learn to transform and create a new game based on the Fortnite theme, right?
Play.
So that's going to happen. No problem. Right. Self-driving? Self-driving? Yeah, whatever. Of course. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, you may look at Elon Musk and Tesla and go, oh, but they're fumbling at it. It's not very good. And it's like, there's one thing that's true about computers. They always get faster, better, smarter. And now that the computers are programming the computers, it's going to accelerate and happen a lot faster, right? So self-driving, 10 years out? No, 5 years. 3 years. It will all happen way faster than you think. So what's important is that things like humanities, psychology, social sciences, these are going to become more important, and those skills are going to need to get into the programming. We started out before our interview talking about bias in machine learning models. Well, let's get to it, because if we don't create a data union around getting black data into the system, we're going to be oppressed by it, right?
Yeah.
So we need to be out there saying, well, let's make sure the desires of our tribe are in the system, because if they're not, we'll be snuffed out.
Yeah.
Right. So this is how it'll evolve. The machine, if you will, is just going to be magic as far as we're concerned. It's going to be, you'll be able to get whatever you want. So let's make sure that we instruct that machine for humanity and not for the likes of warlords and oppressors and all these other sorts of people who would use the machine to snuff us out or subjugate us or whatever the heck they do, right? That's the future. It's going to be powerful and it can be scary. So let's get into it, right? Let's not cower and go, I hope it's not like that. It's like, it's going to be like that. So let's get into it, right?
I love that. I love that. And it's so necessary, needed, and timeful, especially in the time, you know, since the world has taken the pause since seeing George Floyd and the COVID response and like a lot more companies I've seen, it seem to be getting more invested in diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yes and no. I'll tell you the downside of that. Most of the companies that are getting into that are checkboxing it.
Ooh.
Right? I hired 100 black people. I didn't put any of them in any positions of power. Now let's carry on. Right? That's what's happening. And when push comes to shove and the economy's down, that kind of hiring decreases. It's like, we can't hire you right now. We just got to keep our bottom line. So we, the melanin enhanced people of the world, need to drive our own agenda and not just say, now give us a hand. It's like, they're not going to give you a hand. You need to have your own hand. This is the theme of our conversation. Is like, you need to build your own tables. You're not going to get a seat at the table.
Yep.
We need to build our own tables.
Another thought I had too when you were talking about it is like, man, this I forget that Will Smith movie where the robots take over.
iRobot.
There you go.
That's off an Asimov model, you know, the Foundation series.
I was like, man, we're going to be in here, iRobot, but we the only ones going to be fighting the robots.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, you got robots. Now, you know, this is coming, the police robots, right? Whose neighborhood do you think they're going to police first?
Coded bias.
They're going to go, why did you send them to the black neighborhood? That's where the most crime is. Shoulder shrug. So, you know, we gotta be in the game. We can't just sit by and assume that, you know, you can't just apply to the greater good of man and assume things are going to be better for you. It's like, no, you need to jump in and start swimming, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So what projects are you, you know, currently working on, and where can people find you? Because you're a wealth of information. Like I said, you're a national treasure, and I know people want to connect with you.
So I have a website. So William-A-Adams.com, ADAMS.com. That's where all the magic happens. So I've got links to my socials and links to other podcasts, any writing I do, appearances, you know, words of wisdom. My blog shows up there. I write code on a blog and I put things on there. So my website, William-A-Adams.com, is the best place to go to connect and see what I'm doing. The projects I'm doing now are about techquity and trying to get people into tech in various different ways. And most importantly, to build tech businesses, because I want us to be successful in that, you know, making our own money with our own patents and equity in our own companies. I want us to get acqui-hired. I want us to get be acquired as companies. So, because that's how you make millionaires, right?
Yeah.
You get your company acquired. So that's what I'm doing. Everything I'm doing is about increasing techquity for melanin-enhanced people.
Love it. Love it. And we're going to be on that journey with you. I salute you. I want to thank you for all your knowledge, wisdom that you shared with us today. Two more questions before we go out. One just came in my head. I got to ask this. Alexa or Siri?
Siri?
Wait, why seriously? Siri?
Come on. We just went through the whole Apple thing.
But you got Alexa all in your home, so
I got them both, and both of them can turn on the lights. Hey Siri, turn off the lights. No. Siri, I'll go Siri.
Okay.
I'll tell you this. I don't bring Alexa into my car.
Okay.
Siri's in the car because she's on my wrist.
Okay, Siri's most trusted.
Most trusted.
So yeah, thank you. And
for those two questions, okay.
Well, I'm gonna end off like this. For those of you listening, I'm gonna give you I'm gonna get the show notes from William and put it in there so you can connect with them. I'm sure I'm gonna work with them on something else in the future. I just don't know what that is yet. But we'll figure that out offline. Any last words of wisdom, William, for the people to sign us off?
Oy, words of wisdom. Well, usually I say, hey, let's all just be kind and love each other for a better planet. Right. But the words of wisdom beyond that is like, live a intentional life, right? Ooh. Don't walk through life asleep. And that's true of any age.
I love that. Live an intentional life.
Yeah.
Don't walk through your life asleep. If you sleepwalk it, wake up.
Wake up. Wake the F up. If George Floyd didn't wake you up, wake the F up.
Yeah.
This yes, game please. Is not rigged for you.
so join in the game of life. Get you some tequity. Wherever your passion lies, get you some tequity.
Yeah, intergenerational wealth development through tequity.
Love it. Thank you again, William. That is it for our edition of Rise Urban Nation today, and we'll catch you on the next time.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Rise Urban Nation.
Thank you for taking the journey.
Be sure to like, comment, and smash that subscribe button. And stay connected with Terrell on and off the show. Follow at Rise Urban Nation on all platforms.
Do what you love. Love what you do. Don't chase the money. Let the money chase you.